Okay. So we've established, we spent quite a lot of time on the difference between Rashi, Tosfos, and the Rambam on the idea of the aim and the uber being one unit or two units, and it's something we'll get back to and we'll pick up on. But let's get into the Gemara itself and start looking at Tosfos a little bit more. And we've got some material to do that will really give you a wonderful insight into the development of halacha. I'm not sure how far we'll get into that today, but we'll start it at least and see how we go. But let's start in the Gemara itself. So with the Mishnah we know, I take it, and as with all these things, particularly when we're working on a Mishnah, the Mishnah you should kind of know by heart, so that you don't have to think when it refers back to the Mishnah. It's just worth putting in the effort to know the Mishnah, at least to picture the cases, the Uber, the Lokach and the Mocher, and the Shutfus and the Makabel, and just have all these things so that each time it's referenced, you don't need to go back and kind of work out what is it. So as you're learning Gemara, those are things that it's really important to put effort into, because the ideas are thrown backwards and forwards. The Gemara is very conceptual, and it plays with concepts all the time. So each concept needs to be clear in your mind in your own way. You can give it a name, you can give it a picture in your mind, you can whatever it is, but have it something in your mind that you can juggle with, that you can play with. Otherwise, you keep on losing track because you've got to go back and reconstitute what it is. So it's really, really important to do that, and that's part of the benefit of learning slowly, because you learn, you go through things slowly like this. You've got an opportunity to really get on top of it. So the Gemara, the Mishnah basically said to us that when a goy has a share in a bechor, whether it's the mother or it's the uber or it's both or it's one, that's the Rashi and Tosfos and the Rambam and everything we've been discussing. But basically, if a non-Jewish person has a share in this unit called a bechor, it isn't a bechor, as far as the halachas of bechor are concerned. So again, bechor has two meanings. It has a physiological meaning, a firstborn animal. And even if we define it the Torah's way, a peter rechem, a mother's firstborn, the opening of the mother's womb, so there hasn't been it's not a cesarean section, and there hasn't been a miscarriage before it, all the halachic definitions make it a bechor. That's fine. Then now it's a physiological bechor. That doesn't mean that all the halachas of bechor apply to it, because that's what the first Mishnah deals with. You can have a bechor that qualifies physiologically as a bechor, but doesn't qualify halachically as a bechor. What prevents it from qualifying halachically as a bechor? The involvement of a partial ownership of a goy. And this is a model for all of halacha. And as we learn Gemara, that's an important part of it, that we're not just learning bechoras, we're learning a halachic concept. So that idea that we talked last time about the importance of naming something, of giving it a halachic term, because then once the halachic term is clarified, all the halachas are applied automatically. They're applied very very naturally. But here we see it's not quite so simple. You can give something the term bechor, because it qualifies as a bechor in terms of all the physiological definitions that the Torah gives it. We're not looking at what science calls it. The Torah calls it a bechor, and yet we will not apply the dinim of the bechor to this particular animal, because there's an inhibitor, there's something holding it back. What's the inhibitor? The ownership of a goy. Where do we get that from? Shenemba b'Yisrael avalo be'acher. And again, it's two psukim, as Tosfos learns, or it's one posuk, as Rashi learns, or as the Rambam learns, it's one posuk for Petach Kamor, and it's two psukim for Behemoth Tohero. But there's a clear indication in the psukim, in the Torah, that it's Be Yisroel, that this has to be something that belongs to a Jewish person entirely. Then the din of Bechor can apply to it.
Rabbi, just a technical question. When it brings a posuk as the reason, as it does here, of why the halakhic definition of a bechor is only saying it belongs 100% to a Jew, do we go beyond that posuk and look for a sfor of why that's sensible, or do we say it's gezeret hakatuv, and once we have a posuk, so there's nothing more to discuss, that's what the Torah wanted? I mean, here you can think of a good reason, because it's got to do with the Jews coming out of Mitzrayim and the non-Jews not, and etc. But just asking stylistically, when one learns Gemara and you get to gezeret hakatuv, is that where you stop? or do you?
So that's an important question, and it depends what track you're on. So the Gemara will stop there. And although we'll see further on, the Gemara does play around with ideas, but in a different kind of capacity. The real analysis of the Gemara, if once you've got a posuk, you don't have to go further. That's clear, you've got a posuk. But the Gemara expects you, and you'll see that in the Medroshim and in the Agadot in the Gemara, expects you to philosophize about it. But it's not part of halakhic reasoning. Halakhic reasoning doesn't require a reason other than that it's written in the Torah. Now, you want to go back to the Torah and say, why does Hashem want us to do this with Bechiras? That's fine. You give a drosha on that, and that's important. And that's why, even in our shul, it's important to have different forms of learning. A drosha is when you do the philosophy and the hashkofa and the musa. And the Gemara, you learn the Gemara, and you don't always mix them together. Yes, you can bring a little bit in, but you've got to be careful not to adulterate the reasoning of Gemara with philosophy. And that's one of the things that people tend to do today a lot, and that can lead you anywhere. Then you can go and say, today Bechor doesn't apply, or today the women should be Bechoris also, because what's the difference between a man and a woman? And had the Torah thought foresaw this time, it would have done that, and then you can make a whole new Torah. So in the reasoning piece, which is what we're busy with now, go to Pasuk, there's nothing more to do. And you see that from the Gemara's first question. So if you were teaching this Mishnah to a class of just ordinary people, if we were to take people from Ra'anana, a random sample of the people here, and you were to teach them this Mishnah, you read and you translate and the Mishnah's clear. Now you're going to debate the Mishnah. What's the first thing you're likely to talk about? What do you think the first question would ask?
Ask why?
Why?
Why? Why? Someone has just got a non-Jewish wife. It's 1%. Why?
Why? You would start with the why questions. That's where the conversation would go. So it's interesting to note that that's not where the Gemara goes. So the Gemara starts with Kol Hani Lamali. Gemara starts on style, on composition.
Yeah, but it does ask why, but not about why. Yes. But about style. Why all the cases?
Yeah. Why do we need all these cases? If this Mishnah is telling us that partial non-Jewish ownership of a Bechor or its mother invalidates it for the dinim of Bechor, then say that. What more do I need to know? I can work out all the different cases where that can happen. Why stylistically? Why write the Mishnah in this way? So that's quite interesting. So there is so much covered for the structure of the Mishnah. The Mishnah was put together by Rabbi Yehuda Hanossi. It was edited. Every word was carefully thought out. Every phrase was carefully put together. So even before we get into the content of it, we've got enough background. We've got a posuk. So that tells us this comes from the Torah. The Torah says, okay, what does the Torah say? Be Yisrael. What does that mean? The Mishnah says, total Jewish ownership, not partial Jewish ownership, total Jewish ownership. Okay, I get it. So tell me that. Why put it in this particular way? That's what the Gemara goes into. And that too, in our own thinking, and remember when I said once, part of what we learn in Gemara is how to think. Part of what we need to do is, if we're reading something or studying something which has been very deliberately composed, the real piece to be looking at is really, why is it composed in this particular way? If you're listening to a piece of music, you don't start saying, why did Beethoven write this piece? Or what is the meaning of this phrase? You know, you can do that as something separate. But if you're listening from a musical perspective, you're just going to say, why is it put together in this way? Why this instrument? Why is it repeated so many times? Why is it repeated in different keys? It's about how did the composer, or in this case the author, and the Tanoim themselves, what is in their mind in putting it together in this particular way? So says the Gemara Tzrichi, it needs to be composed this way. If any part of the Mishnah were missing, then it would be missing, and then something substantial would be missing, and that's an important part of it. Again, if you're reading a book or you're watching a movie or a play or you're listening to music, one of the important questions to ask is, if this piece wasn't there, then what would be missing? If the answer is nothing, then that piece shouldn't be there. And if there is something, then it's important to discover what it is. So again, it depends on how much cover you give to the writer. or to the composers, the author, if this is a genius and a master, then you want to know each thing. Why did he put it there? Because it would seem as if it not being there wouldn't make much of a difference. So therefore you want to be Ovid on that. You want to figure that out. So that's the Gemara's starting point is, and you could almost read this not as a question and an answer, but as one statement. Kol hani lama li tzrichi. Why do we need all these things? Because without them, there would be something missing. It's not even a question. It's not as if there's a have a minute, we don't need it. It's kol hani lama li tzrichi. Why is this all written here? Because you need every bit of it. Why? Because the itana lokeach have a mina mishum de komaisi lo likedusha. Let's look at the first one. It says halokeach uber chamor shel ovid kachovim. You buy a fetus of the chamor from an ovid kachovim. Do you have to also save a hamoichelai? So what is the case? Buying it's not a, now that you buy it and it's completely yours, and it's not a bechor. If you sell it to a goy, of course it's not going to be a bechor. Why do I have to say hamoichel? That's the first question, isn't it? No, says the Gemara. I might have thought, have a mina mishum de komaisi la likdusha. When you buy a chamor, an ubar, you're bringing it into kedusha. And we've already talked about how Rashi learns that. We'll see how Tosfos learns it now. Rashi said you bring it into kedusha. It's got a Jewish owner, therefore the animal will keep Shabbos, and that's a form of kedusha that applies to the animal. But maybe if he sells it and thereby is taking it out of the realm of Kedusha, we should give him a knas. A knas, we translate as a kind of a fine, but it's a deterrent, it's a disincentive. That's really what a knas is. We want to make it inconvenient for him so that he won't do this. So I might have thought, clearly, that if you sell an Uber to an Ovid Kachovim, clearly Midoraisa, this isn't going to be a Bechor. But maybe we should force him to treat it as a Bechor so that he doesn't get any financial benefit from taking an animal outside of the realm of Kedusha. And therefore, we have to be told both. In both cases, there's no Chiyuv Bechor. Hamashmalan, so it comes to tell us.
I mean, before I'd seen this Gemara, I would have thought the Bechor is like a schus for an owner to have a Bechor. Yes. He gives up, but here it's a punishment.
It's a
ramification. No, yeah. It has a stick to do it midrabbonim would be no schus. Isn't that right? If it's a real Bechor, you'd be mekayim the mitzvah Bechor, that's fine. But if the rabbonim say, you just give that to the Kohen, not because it's really a Bechor, but because you've been a bad guy, and you're just going to give it to the Kohen so that you don't benefit out of it, then there's no excuse out of it, then you're just being punished.
So it's not, it's a bit unusual. They're taking something that's a mitzvah and making it, giving it a
flavor of it, because there is a financial side to it. There's a cost. So now we're saying you try to get out of the cost, you're not going to get out of it. You're going to have to pay in any case, and it won't even count as a mitzvah.
Why can't you learn it backwards? So if for Hamoicher is covered, where you would have the Havamina. And in that case, even in that case, you put to and Kavachomer for Lokach, where there's no Havamina. In other words, understand that we need the second piece. But then come back and explain.
Why can't you just do Hamoicher? If you say Hamoicher,
in Hamoicher, there's a Havamina to think that you wouldn't be put to because they wanted to punish you. But there's no Havamina like that in Hakoine. So if Hamoicher, that Havamina doesn't apply and you nonetheless, potter than
Kavachomer. Let's think it through. So you would say, the Mishnah would then say, Hamoicher uber chamoiro le'ovid kechovim. Potter. Hamoicher uber chamoiro. And what would be the case with halokeach?
So wouldn't you know
lokeach?
If in that case.
You might say it's not, because you've acquired it into.
Now
Jewish
owns you. Before it's born, it's yours. Before it's even. So halokeach, that's clearly we need. The question is, do we need any more than that? Because Alokach
is the basic case.
Yes.
But I think that's what bothered me last time. Like, what is your default position? Because what I think, if I'm understanding you correctly, it sounds like if the Moicher case, you've learned that you're not, there's no knas and there's no din of Bechor. So even in the Lokach case, when you're going to be buying it, What's the base position? Because the Mishnah, if the Mishnah doesn't teach it, you got to be saying what there. is no din of bechor.
If the Mishnah didn't teach it to you, it would be hard, isn't that so? Because I look calf, of course there should be bechor. You're buying an Uber from a goy. Why wouldn't there be bechor? It's 100% Jewish. It's 100% Jewish. So that certainly should be bechor. So that's your default. That's where you start.
But what on the basis of what? On bringing it.
Bring it into a
the fact that it's ownership. Why wouldn't there be a din bechor? You own it before it's born. Now it's born. It's a peterechem of its mother, and it's yours.
But then, how do you deal with the pasuk? Is the default position that if a goy has a chayrik, then it's
so that's all without the pasuk, because at the end of it, Shishenema explains to you why this is also so. But without the pasuk, you would say,
If it taught hamoicher and brought the pasuk, then why would you need to teach halakach?
If it would have brought that, if you sell an uber to a goy, it can't be. Then you wouldn't have known that Yisrael means even if the goy has a chelek in the mother. You've got the full bechor. You might have thought that's enough. When you sell it to a goy, I understand the goy owns the uber. That's a problem. But if you buy the uber, the goy just has a chelek in the mother. Maybe that's okay.
No, the Gemara doesn't bother to tell us the chiddush of the case of Lokach.
We need to know.
The mother belonged to non-Jew, it affects the Uber, which we wouldn't know.
The question is, why do we need any more than that?
Yeah.
So we now know that you need Mocher as well, because there's a thought that maybe we would be Machmir on the Mocher, because he's doing something wrong. But we're not Machmir, we just leave it alone. V'hamishtatef lo lamali. Okay, so then why do I need mishtatef? So mishtatef is the two of them have ownership in the Uber. That kind of, why do I need that? Clearly, once I've already learnt that ha-moicher lo, that ha-lokeach and ha-moicher are both potter from Bechor because of B'Yisroel, surely a partnership would apply as well. Says the Gemara, no, not so clear. There's a day of Rabbi Yehuda, and we've already said in some things we go like Rabbi Yehuda, isn't that so? We've already learned that in the question of whether a peter chamor is also bahano before pidyon, on that we go like Rabbi Yehuda, not like Rabbi Shimon. In the Mishnah, so already we've got the Mishnah like Rabbi Yehuda in some things, but on this. The Tana of the Mishnah is not going like Rabbi Yehuda, because Rabbi Yehuda actually says shutfus ovid kechovim chayevus bibachoyro. He says if it's just a shutfus, if the goy owns the mother, no good. If the goy owns the uber, no good. But if the goy owns a part of the uber or a part of the mother, that would be okay, as long as the Jew be Yisrael means, as long as the Jew has a part, that would be sufficient. So we've got to know that when we bring the posuk shnei ba'bi Yisrael, that be Yisrael means totally Yisrael. That is not so clear, because it's a machlokes Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. And so we need to be told that that's how the Mishnah holds. Okay? So now we understand why we need the whole of the first sentence. We know why Hamishtatef loy. Now we go, v'hamekabel hemenu v'hanoisen lo b'kabola. So what's the case here? Yeah? Either it's your animal, I keep it, I manage it, I take care of it for a share of the babies, or it's my animal and you take care of it for a share of the babies. Why do we need that? V'hamekabel lamele mishum dekoboi lemitni v'hanoten lo b'kabola. The main thing we need it for is hanoten lo b'kabola. You're right, Hamekabel you don't need.
It's not a case of Mechon.
Yeah, let's think, why don't we need it for Mechabel? I take the animal from the goy.
The goy's got a chelek in the mother already, we know that.
In fact, the mother is the goy's, I'm just managing it.
Yeah.
So that we already know, that I don't need to be told. But that I'm noticing that if it's my animal, and the goy's just managing it, and for that the goy gets a chelek in the animals, in the babies, that also is not okay for that, I'm going to need it. Now, I know what you're thinking already, but why, even Anosen, it should be obvious, which is what the Gemara asks, V'anosen lo b'kabola lamali, and why do I need noten lo b'kabola? That should also be clear. Itzrich. salkadaita chamina ho il ve'ikar behema di Israel hi. Likanse. I might have thought this is a far-fetched case. I might have thought, you're right, says the Gemara. Mekabel, I don't really need either one. It's clear, if it's my animal and the guy is managing it but gets a share of the Uber, that's shutfus. Isn't that so? He's a partner, we've already said shutfus is no good. If it's his animal and I'm taking care of it for a share, it's still shutfus. So this is just a repetition of the case of shutfus in the Uber. So you're right, we don't need it. But what we do need is noten lo bekabola. Why? Because noten lo bekabola can lead to mistakes. So somebody now knows my animal. Somebody knows that I have a cow that hasn't had a baby and knows that I've given this cow to a non-Jew to take care of. A bechor is born and we don't give it as a bechor. I think we're afraid of a kind of marisayin. We're afraid of people thinking, so maybe you don't actually, nowadays you don't need to give a bechor, whatever the case may be. So because of that, we might be machmir and say, you know what, treat it like a bechor so that nobody makes any mistakes. Comes the Gemara to tell us, no, we don't do that. We leave the halacha as it is, and you don't have to do that. And I just want to unpack that a little bit. And what's the reason, says the Gemara, dilma atil ichlufu bevehema achriti. You might come to change it. Somebody who sees it might come and draw a conclusion about another animal which is completely Jewish. Kamashmalan, so we see from here that isn't the case.
Isn't that a concern both ways? I mean, if the goy's animal is sitting with me and I'm looking after it.
And you don't give it as a bechor, so what? Because it's a goy's animal, we get it.
Well, they could confuse it, exactly the same confusion. They could think, oh, that's my animal and I don't give it as a
that before. In that case, they wouldn't know that it's your animal. Here we're talking about, so there's an interesting thing with Marisayin. It's interesting, the Gemara doesn't use the words Marisayin here, but it seems to me that it's working with the same Gedarim. The thing with Marisayin is an important thing to know. Marisayin does not mean that an idiot who hasn't taken the trouble to find out the facts draws the wrong conclusion. Marisayin means that with the facts, you can draw the wrong conclusion. So if you're sitting in a treif restaurant having a Coca-Cola, that's not Marisayin. Because anybody who took the trouble to see what you were eating would see you're eating a Coca-Cola or you're having a salad or whatever it is. That's not Marisayin. Whether it's right to do or not is a different issue, but it's not Marisayin. Marisayin would be if you're eating
a kosher McDonald's in a McDonald's.
Well, if you're on an airline and they're serving you, you're in business class or in first class, and they give you a meal that looks exactly the same as the goyish meal, but it's 100% kosher, right? That's Marisayin. That's genuine, because it's anybody who even knows all the facts looks at it and says, this is the same thing. It's not Marisayin if somebody's not taking the trouble to find out what it is. So the fact that it's the goy's animal in your place, I don't have to worry about Marisayin. Just do your homework and you'll find out the animal's on mine. No Marisayin. But my animal with a goy, you do your homework and what will you find out? That it's my animal. Oh. So why am I not giving bechor? Oh. That's the problem. So I can draw a false conclusion.
So why does it say hamakabal?
Just stylistically. Just stylistically. I'm a couple of honors. to balance the Mishnah. It's lekeach and moicha, mishtatef, and mekabal and noisan. If you can imagine it graphically. You've got two at the top, one in the middle, and two at the bottom. That's nice design.
So why aren't we worried about the Marisayin? What's it? The commercial that we're not choishes for the Marisayin. So why not?
So first, let's start and wonder why we would be. I mean, what are the chances? Somebody goes and they know that the animal is yours, and they see it there, and they know that you didn't give it as a bechor. I mean, it's a once. How likely is that even to happen?
Steps are about to. But didn't we also cover 3 weeks ago, the whole union about that giving it anyway to the non-Jew would change the status from a Kedusha perspective as
yes.
well.
So that's a different issue which we're going to touch on again today. So the issue of the Kedusha. But yeah, it's just the Marisayin question. So both ways are difficult. Firstly, why would we even worry about the Marisayin? If we are worried about it, why don't we worry about the Marisayin? So why would we worry about the Marisayin? So Marisayin is funny. Marisayin is not really about maybe somebody will see and they will misunderstand. How do we know that that's not the real problem with Marisayin?
Well, we can see right here. They're not worried about it.
But we take the cases where there is a worry about Marisayin. How do we know that the reason not to do it
Chadre Chadore.
Because of Chadre Chadore. Because we know that you, if it's Maris Ayin is a problem, you can't even do it in a place where there are no people. So clearly it's not about social things. So the way I like to define Maris Ayin, and that's why the word Maris Ayin, it doesn't say Shema Yiru Acherim. Maris Ayin means the sight of the eye. Something that looks wrong is wrong. Doesn't matter if anybody else is looking or not. Even if it is right, if it looks wrong, it is wrong. That's what Maris Ayin means. Maris Ayin means if somebody watching, a reasonable person who knows, who can see all the visible facts, would draw a wrong conclusion, that's something you shouldn't be doing. Not because they'll see it, just because it's not right to do it. It's not right to do something that looks wrong. That's the idea of Maris Ayin. Here we see in the Gemara where that line is drawn. This is going too far. So I might have thought, it's right on the line. It's enough on the line for us to say, maybe this too is not right. So you're giving your animal to the goy, and leaving aside the question of whether it's right to give to the goy or not, but you're giving the animal to the goy. It's your animal, and there's not going to be a chiyuv b'chora, that if that animal now has a male calf, that calf is not going to be given to the Kohen, and that looks wrong. So why are we saying it doesn't really look wrong? Because you can't see that it's a Bechor. It's not visible. That's why it's not Maris Ayin. It's true if somebody saw all the things and they could put it together, but that's not what we're worried about. We're worried about somebody, if you take a snapshot and you look at it, it looks wrong. Yeah, you'll take a snapshot of a mother and a calf. No, that's nice. The calf had a baby, mazel tov. You'll take a snapshot of the baby two months later and it's still there. It hasn't been given to a Kohen. Fine. Who says it was a Bechor? Who knows? Was there something before? Well, you don't know the facts. So that far we don't go. That's not something we have to worry about in terms of Maris Ayin. So this little sugya actually draws the line. It would be one of the makaris we would use. If I had a shaila about whether something was Maris Ayin or not, this is one of the things I would look at and say, does it fit into this category, or does it fit into a category which is very obviously Maris Ayin? So this is a subtle one, and this is where the Gemara draws the line down the middle and says, beyond this is going too far, we wouldn't do that.
But the notion of the Gemara seems to imply a different type of Maris Ayin, because it says, we worry that somebody else will actually bring a fully Jewish behemoth. And think this is also could be, just like he never had to take, it's that other kind of Maris Ayin, the colloquial one, that could lead other people to make the wrong conclusions. That seems to be implied here.
So very often when we use Maris Ayin, it's given in that way. So if Maris Ayin didn't have any implications for others, then it would be difficult to make it also.
But the implication for others really is what you're saying is a...
It's the halachic technique of classifying
to the point that you're doing something that you wouldn't be for others.
Since theoretically somebody who saw it might draw a conclusion, therefore let's call it Maris Ayin. Now that it's called Maris Ayin, it makes no difference if anybody sees you. That's not the point. But for it to become Maris Ayin, it should be something that if an objective person were to see, with all the facts, they could draw the wrong conclusion, no matter how unlikely that is. So that's the piece of Gemara. And interesting, therefore, the way the Gemara goes straight into stylistic issues, not into philosophic issues. And from the stylistic issues, we learn a whole lot of philosophy. And that's what's really important, that our philosophy is learned from halakhic analysis. We don't do halakhic analysis based on a philosophy.
It's the hashkofa in the halacha.
The hashkofa comes out of halacha, not the halacha out of the hashkofa. And that's where modern Orthodox is going crazy today. And of course, Reform and Conservative a long time ago. In trying to develop a philosophy and then adapting halacha to the philosophy. And where does the philosophy come from? It comes from modern, from out there. So now there's a philosophy which everybody's accepting. So now what do we do with halacha? Let's try and fit halacha in. So we have to be a bit careful of that. We've got to develop our philosophies out of halacha, not our halachas out of philosophy. And here's a great example where we learn amazing things from a stylistic analysis of the words of a Tana. That's where it comes from, and that's the skill that we need to learn here. So where I want to get into with you and take you on a really interesting journey is just the beginning of Tosfos around this question of Maisi Lalik Dusha. So we've talked about it quite a lot already. Rashi says it's about Shabbos, about Shemini Shabbos, and we've talked about the Shita Mekubetzes' question and others like, what kind of Shemini Shabbos? The animal belongs to the non-Jew. You've sold the animal. What is Shemini Shabbos? What do you have to worry about? And then there's the Gemara in Avodah Zarah. You remember, well, you're worried that maybe they'll borrow the animal or rent the animal, or maybe you'll call to the animal and cause it to walk on Shabbos. But that's not what Rashi's saying. Rashi clearly means, as the Netziv says in the Merune Esau there, Rashi clearly means that if a body of halachot apply to the animal in the way that it's worded in the Torah, which we said last week or the week before, the ato vehemt ato v'avdecho v'amascho v'gercha v'emtecha, and v'emtecha is mentioned. It's that there's some kind of Shabbos kedusha attached to your behemoth, in a way that it isn't attached to your cars. It's attached to your cattle in a different sort of way. And by selling the animal to a goy, you're removing it from Kedusha. Now, there's no such issue. It doesn't say anywhere in the Torah you the problems with selling animals to goyim for other reasons completely, but not for this one. But still, Rashi works on that. And Tosfos picks up on that and says, Maiti Laila Kedusha, the third Tosfos. Perusha Kuntras, Shetehe Shovetet B'Shabbat. That Rashi says the problem here is, or the asset, if you buy the animal and you're bringing it into Yiddishkeit, you're creating an opportunity for this animal to be included in Hilchot Shabbat. V'chein mafkala mikedusha she'ovid kechavim oseh ba melacha b'shabbat. And the same with taking it out of Kedusha means the non-Jew is going to work with it on Shabbat, and it will no longer be included in Hilchot Shabbat in any kind of a way, and therefore there's a diminishment of Kedusha in some form or other. Says Tosfos, V'loshen Kedusha lo mashmaken. Kedusha is a funny word to use for that. Where do we hear that Kedusha attached to the animal for keeping Shabbos? It's kind of a little bit Hasidish. It's not halachic. It doesn't sit comfortably with Tosfos. So what does it mean, Maiti Laila Kedusha? Now, where does this idea, before we even go further in
what's the meaning of that? V'loshen Kedusha lo mashmaken?
The word Kedusha, the word, quote, unquote, Kedusha, does not imply that. You know,
meaning what? What's
Kedusha should be used with something where Kedusha is used. So you'll see where Tosfos is going to go and say Kedushas Bechon.
But not for Shabbos?
Yeah, because it's not, where does Kedusha apply to an animal? An animal that keeps Shabbos has Kedusha.
Not the essence of Shabbos itself.
No, 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 no. In this context, yeah. The word Kedusha doesn't seem the right word.
Okay.
But where does the idea of Kedusha come from? Where does Rashi pick it up from? So we need to look at the Gemara a little bit further on Gimel Amud Beis. We just turn two pages. There's a story there. And we'll come to the story when we get there. And it's about 15 lines from the bottom. In the middle of the line, Rav Marie Bar Rachel. Can you see that, Philip? Have you got that? Rav Marie Bar Rachel. Havyale Hahi Chayuta. He had a herd of cattle. Hava Makne Leudnayhu Leoved Kechovim. He used to sell the ears of the animal to a non-Jew. So now the non-Jew has a partnership in the animal. The asaluhu begizav avoda, and nevertheless he wouldn't allow it to be sheared and the wool to be used or anything. So he treated them as bechor, but they weren't technically a bechor because he'd sold the ear. So he was being very machmir. All the chumras kind of ear. The yayv luhu lekoanim, and he would give it to the kohen. Okay, so he would kind of do it all. The chalai chayuted Rav Marie Bar Rachel, and Rav Marie Bar Rachel's herds died. They got the plague, and they all died. Asked the Gemara, v'chi me'achad asalu begizav avoda v'yayblu lekoanim, amay makne lulu ednayu. What's wrong with this Rav Marie Bar Rachel? What's he saving here? He's giving up what he's keeping.
And he doesn't get
he's giving it to the Kohen as well.
Without getting the mitzvah.
Without getting the mitzvah.
Maybe it's just like Rabbi Yehuda. I mean, that's Rabbi Yehuda Shittah, right?
That what?
That a shit was with a goy. You have to be able to...
No, but why, then why give it? Then why sell
he's
it?
He's doing a bit of both.
You're right. Getting nothing out of selling it. If you hold like Rabbi Yehuda, you're gaining nothing. You're gaining nothing. Amai maknil utnai lo avit kechavim. Answers the Gemara. He was worried that while the animal was in his possession, somebody would use the animal or would shear the wool or something. And in order to avoid that, he makes it, from a Kedusha perspective, not a Bechor, but financially he treats it as a Bechor in every way. So I'm not trying to get out of anything. The Kohen gets his due. I'm not doing anybody out of it. But if it should happen that somebody uses the animal, there's no issue. So he's a great act of tzidkus. What's the next question?
The wonderful animal.
Yeah, if he's such a tzaddik, why did he get punished? That's amazing. That's what he did. He should be rewarded. Yachi, my time at Kalu Chayuta de Rav Marie. Answers the Gemara. Mishum de mafke lehu mikdushotayo. That's the source for Rashi, because and for the Gemara, because the kedusha, he took the kedusha away from them. But says Tosfot, now we see what Kedusha means.
That's
Bechor. Kedusha is Bechor, Kedusha Shabbos. If this is where it comes from, where does Rashi come with this Kedusha Shabbos? The Gemara is very clear. It uses the word Kedusha, it uses the word Mafke Kedusha. It's very, very clear. It makes Rashi very hard.
What's the reason for Isser that I'm using on Shabbos? I mean, I know it's obviously possible, but there must be...
Why an animal should have menuchah on Shabbos. You know, probably because if your animals are working on Shabbos, your mind is on it. It's a little bit like a business operating on Shabbos. The animals were people's businesses.
When it comes to a machine, then there's a machlokas in there.
If you understand that here we're looking at the philosophy, let's say you can look at halacha and you can say it's only animals. Yeah. But if you try and understand the reason for it and you say part of the reason for it is because it damages your Shabbos, but a person can't have a clear Shabbos if his business is operating. If the goy has, the way we do it in halacha, that the goy has the business for that day and whatever decisions the goy makes or he's entitled to make and the income from that day belongs to the goy, so then you can take your mind off it. But if you have an interest in the business and you have management control, if you have an interest in a public company, you can take your mind off it on Shabbos. What can you do? You can't do anything in the weekday either. But if it's your business where you do have management control and there's consequence and the business is working on Shabbos, it's not possible for you to have your mind clear. And the animals, but it's not Kedusha. It's not about Kedusha. It's about your own Shabbos, your own peace of mind. So Tosfos, that's not Kedusha. If you want to know where this idea of mafkile mikedusha sayu comes from Daf Gimel. And that's a different kind of kedusha altogether.
The problem with Daf Gimel seems to be, even though halachically he's permitted to do it, he was punished for doing it.
Yes, because of the mafkia kedusha tayu. Because right, each thing he did...
says you can do
yes,
that.
True. The halacha says you can do it.
Or rather...
The halacha says that you can do it, but there's such a thing as... reducing Kedusha in a halakhically acceptable way. That's it. It's an incredible concept. That you can be keeping halacha 100% and you can be reducing Kedusha and there can be punishment.
So he wasn't doing it in the ordinary course of making a sale. He was actually making a
for the best of good reason. And for the best of reasons. So his intention was great. He was doing nothing halakhically wrong. And yet he was damaging Kedusha. Last week we spoke a little bit about Kedusha and how important it is and how important it is to be sensitive to it. You could have somebody who in shul speaks to his davening mate at a time you're allowed to speak. It's not in the middle of Kriyas Torah, it's not in the middle of Chazaros HaShatz, it's not between Baruch Hu and... there are not a lot of times that you're allowed to speak, but he finds a time when you're allowed to speak and he's speaking. And he's doing nothing halakhically wrong, and maybe it's for the best of intention. He's doing it for a good reason, but he could be damaging the Kedusha of the Beis HaKnesses. People are concentrating and they're there and there's a Kedusha and now there's a little side conversation going on. Nothing halakhically wrong, but you're damaging the atmosphere.
We have a number of examples in the Gemara where even where there's no damage, but and I think you spoke about this, one of your first shiurim in shul as well, that beautiful things of halakha is it's relevant to the individual. It's a government element to it. So you had in the Gemara the example of a person who gave 20% of his ma'aser And yet he still lost his money because for that individual himself, he was able to give more and he hadn't. And therefore, you know, he's doing everything right.
Even though you're doing everything halakhically right, but in that subjective situation, it isn't there. For example, you can have it, for example, in questions of, and I know that's a touchy question here in Israel, where we're very casual about everything, and it's an interesting conversation, but let's say in a place where people have more of a sense of occasion than we do here in Israel, and people come to shul dressed very casually, but that's not what most people there do. Nothing halakhically wrong, we're doing something terribly halakhic. You're dressed in a tzniztika way, you're just dressed in a way that damages the atmosphere. One can mess with the kedusha of a place. One can mess with the atmosphere. Never mind kedusha. It can have nothing to do with kedusha. You can mess with the atmosphere. You go to a black tie dinner party dressed in a t-shirt. In the days when t-shirts weren't what they are today in the world of the tech world, and you damage the atmosphere. Somebody's organized a black tie event, and you come in a t-shirt and jeans, and it damages. You're doing anything wrong? No. You're dressed sneeze. You're dressed accordingly. You're not doing anything wrong. Just keep messing with the atmosphere. And Kedusha is about atmosphere. It's a particular kind of atmosphere. You can mess with the atmosphere even if what you're doing is halakhically correct.
I'm changing the subject slightly, but maybe what Rush is grappling with over here, in the case of Rav Murray, you're speaking about a proper Bechor that was born to a Jewish owner that is now sold to a Goy. So you can speak about being Mafke, the Kedusha of the Bechor. In the case of the Mishnah, you're speaking about an Uber in a Goy's behemoth. This is not a Bechor, it can never be a Bechor. And now the Commissioner speaking, or the Gemara speaking on my syllabic condition, you can't elevate
it to... A great chiluk. So you're saying the Rashi is holding that you can't compare the Mishnah to the case on Daf Gimel Amud Beis. Because in Gimel Amud Beis, you actually, with a Kumva Aseh, you're removing the Kedusha, which was already there.
Yes.
Here he's acting before there is any Kedusha.
Right.
He's preventing the Kedusha from coming, which makes Tosfos very hard in that case. Isn't that right? Tosfos seeing the two as one. You were going to say something, Ilan?
No, I just don't understand why you're damaging the atmosphere by having made this particular animal no longer before. In other words, the assumption... Yes, that the animal is just an object, okay? There's no kedusha. Let's say we're not worried about the spiritual status of the animal. We're worried about our spiritual status. Once you have an animal that halachically doesn't require, we say that a definition of bechor is something which halachically requires the laws of things. And you've made this animal no longer halachically required. Why is that called damaging
the atmosphere?
That's
because now when you give it to the kohen, which he was doing, it's a charade. You've taken the Kohen sitting there saying...
It's on the next piece. It's not actually on the earphone.
There's an opportunity for a Kohen to be mekabel, a bechor, and to bring on the besam and on the mizbeach, and you've taken all the spirituality out of the transaction, and you've made a transaction. Let's pretend it's a donkey. So a Kohen, you'll get your money. A Kohen who is sensitive to Kedusha would say, it's not about the money. For me, this is an avoida, and this is not an avoida, it's a gift. Thank you for the gift. But this is not an avoida for me. You've destroyed the avoida by selling the ear to the goy. That would be the piece. That's the mafkia mikdusha.
Mm-hmm.
And Tosfos goes on to say...
That's crazy.
Yeah,
because once secular. You give the example... imagine the coin receiving it.
Yeah.
And there's two ways you can receive it. What is this? That's the presence. Thank you very much. That's fine. I've got enough presence. I want to do the avoda of the bechor.
Yeah. And you would have two kinds of kohenim. You would have one kohen who would say, what a tzaddik, Rav Marie, what a tzaddik that you didn't, weren't even chayiv, you got yourself out of it and still you're bringing it to me. Thank you so much, what a tzaddik. And another kohen could say, what a terrible thing you've just done to me. You've done something, I was waiting for an opportunity. I haven't had a bechor for a long time. This could have been a bechor. I wanted to show my children what you do when a kohen receives a bechor, and you've destroyed it. Two ways of responding to it.
Well, the Gemara seems to come down on the side of the latter. It's form and substance, because all of these animals died.
Yes, because of that.
Yes.
It's interesting that consequence is not just for breaking halacha.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, don't we learn wonderful things? We're learning such a technical thing about selling the ear of a donkey to a, or an animal to a goy. And what are we getting out of this? That the consequence that the Ribbono Shel Olam, or as they say in the New Age stuff, the universe reacts, even if you didn't do anything legally wrong. Hashem responds sometimes, even if you didn't break the halacha. You took the spirit out of it. You damaged the kedusha level. And therefore you can say, and the other way around, can you elevate kedusha without halacha? Yes, you can. It's not just about are you doing the mitzvah, it's the way you do a mitzvah. You can do a mitzvah in a such a way where you elevate the kedusha. And the schar for that, just as there's onesh if you take the kedusha down, so the schar if you elevate the kedusha. It's not just about keeping halacha. And that's how, I mean, you see from this, how wouldn't this be a beautiful piece to teach in a school, in a high school? Who would think of teaching this piece of Gemara in a high school? But just imagine, this is the whole thing then and really, it's not just about the do's and don'ts. You can get all the do's and don'ts right. And you can still, your flock can die. And then you say, why did this happen to such a tzaddik? Why does God do such terrible things to good people?
It's pretty terrifying, huh?
And one doesn't understand. How do you know who's tzaddik and who isn't? You don't know who's a tzaddik and who isn't. Everybody would have categorized Rav Mari Bar Rochel as a tzaddik, and he was. But he wasn't.
What was the game for him setting the ears that...
What was the game?
Yeah, just the donkey anyway.
He was just protecting. That's why his intention was so good. He was just protecting. If somebody unbeknown, one of his servants or somebody, used the animal, or cut the wool and used the wool, not realizing it was a bechor, that would be an issur.
The Torah doesn't have that kashash.
Yes, it does. Well, it doesn't have that kashash. You're right. So he thought he was being machmir. I'm going further. I'm protecting. So he was being a big machmir. He was being a big machmir. Look, we have that with Odom. Isn't that so? When Odom and Chava, when he was trying to be a tzaddik and he was being machmir and he told his wife, he made a gezerah.
Don't touch.
That's not what the Rebbeinu Shem said. And so sometimes we try to do the right thing and we go and we do and we... But we've also got to look at what's the emes kait and what's the... Sorry?
The mitzvah wouldn't be there almost if there was such a chashash of that happening.
But sometimes there's a mitzvah there and there's an expectation that we make gezeiros.
Right.
That we take care of it. So this was his form of making a gezeiro. Let's not even get into that's his siag. So that was the way he made the siag. It just wasn't a great siag. And it's an incredible piece of Gemara when we get into it. And we'll see it again. We'll revisit it when we get there. But as you see in Tosfos, Ela kedushas bechora kehayi derav Mari bar Rachel dekalu chayutei mishum demafka lehu mikdusha. They have a makni udnayu leovid kechovim because he sold the ears to a goy. That's it. That's where Tosfos gets his thing. So now we have a machlokas Rashi and Tosfos, and Greg, you gave a beautiful svara as to what the machlokas is about. Is this a comparison or isn't it? Both of them, the idea of mafkia mikdushose is an idea in this Mishnah, and we see it in the beginning of the Gemara. Rashi sees it as to do with the laws of Shabbos, and Tosfos sees it as kedushas b'chora. Where does Tosfos get it from? He gets it from an understanding of the Gemara with Rav Mari Bar Rochel, and he applies it over here. What we'll do next time, unfortunately, next week there won't be a shir unless one of you want to give it. Because I'm going to take a couple of days away.
I can provide the donuts.
So they won't. I can tell you what to prepare. I can.
But we can definitely do chazor with them.
Yeah, I mean, it would be great if you did some work and didn't allow 2 weeks to go without working on it. I'm hoping that you don't even allow 1 week to go without working on it, because it's hard if you do. But certainly 2 weeks. And I'm hoping as we get into it and the group forms, whoever the group is, and that you'll start spending more time on it, so then we can go faster and deeper and do things. That really is just a function of how prepared you are. So I'm hoping as you get into it, you're going to want to prepare more and more. So what we're going to get into next time, I can give you the piece, the handouts, if you remember to bring it up and reprint them, and you can work on that. What we're going to track is, so what about selling it to a Jew? Now, if I sell it to a Jew, is that mafkia kedushoso?
No.
Why?
Jews.
Because it's going to have, because the buyer will then do it. It's not as if there's not going to be. So what we're focusing on here is this a chiyuv on the person or on the animal? If it's a chiyuv on the person, then yes, I'm not mafkiyeing the kedusha from the animal, but I'm cutting myself out of a mitzvah. That's also kind of mafkiyeh kedusha, isn't it? I should be doing the pidyon and then I should sell it. Why am I selling the animal before the pidyon? And what happens if I sell it and you don't even know it's a bechor? What can I do with the money? Is the kedusha transferred onto the money, or isn't it? That's a gemara a little bit further on daf tes on the base. So what I've prepared for us to work on, it's taking us a little bit off the daf, but I think it's okay to do that for this purpose, because it's a very beautiful understanding of the development of halacha. Is there's the Gemara and Daf Tes Amud Beis, which the Rosh quotes, and the Rosh then adds his little piece about Hano'os Domim, about getting benefit from the value of the animal. So now you've sold the animal, so I'm not getting any benefit from the animal. So now we're going like Rabbi Yehuda, that we're not allowed to get benefit from the animal. Fine, I've sold the animal. What about the money? Does the Isur Ano apply to the money as well? And if the other person doesn't know the various different... So the Rosh makes a comment. The Tur quotes the Rosh. The Beis Yosef develops the idea of the Tur further and contrasts it with the Rambam. The Shulchan Aruch paskins like the Rambam. There are more paskins like the Tur. So we get these two pieces of halacha. And the Vilna Gaon explains the machlokes based on a piece of Gemara and Daf Yud. And so you just see the whole of halacha coming together in that piece. And from that, it's all dealing with what this really means to alienate a Bechor. What is that really all about? And we understand the main thing is we see from there is it's about the animal, it's not about the person. It's not that I've done myself out of a mitzvah. It's not that I'm doing the kohen out of the money. It's a completely separate issue of diminishing the kedusha attached to the chiyuvim on the animal, on the object. And that objects can have that level of kedusha. And we see that, of course. I mean, the whole idea of ma'alin b'kodesh ve'en moridim, that you can elevate kedusha, not take it down, applies to objects. So you know, turn a shul into a beis hamedrash, but not a beis hamedrash into a beit knesset. That's the object. So we see that the laws of kedusha do attach to objects. It's not just about the person. A sefer Torah is a chefza shel kedusha. It has its own kedusha. And a bechor, even though it's only the damim, it's only the value of the bechor in the case of a donkey, of a chamor, it actually has a level of kedusha which we've got to be very careful with how we handle it. And how careful we have to be comes out in this little piece based on a rosh, going all the way through to the Vilna Gaon, through to Shulchan Aruch and to the Vilna Gaon, to give you an idea of how it works. So I'll give it to you. The Gemara, you can look at the Gemara inside in Daf Tes Amud Beis. The Rosh himself quotes it. You can look at the Tur inside. You can go to all these Makoros inside or use the handout sheet. But if you spent a bit of time on it, so that when we get into it next in 2 weeks' time, you're already very familiar with it. If you went for David as well. Awesome.
Yeah, well, sometimes the selling of the comments feels a little bit like to the boy, like selling the